Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Tomorrow evening at Croke Park, the Sligo footballers play Wicklow in their league final, with promotion already secured after finishing top of the table. For everyone connected with Sligo football, it's sure to be an emotional occasion because the match falls on the 1 year anniversary of the death of Red Oak Murphy, a highly talented young player who was widely expected to go on and have a stellar intercounty career. On April the 1st last year, aged 21, and just a few days before he was due to collect an award for being named in the Sigerson Cup Team of the Year, Red Oak died by suicide. Today, his parents Geraldine and Redmond are on the show to remember Red Oak. You're very welcome to Friday's Second Captain's Podcast. Hey Murph.
Hey Owen, how's it going?
We're going to have the usual Friday bits at the end of the pod, but in a break from the norm, we are making this episode available to everybody, not just World Service members. Redmond and Geraldine would like their story to reach as many people as possible in the hope of encouraging others experiencing challenges with their mental health to talk to somebody about the difficulties that they're going through. Now, his parents will tell us more about who their son was as a person. As a footballer, he was clearly phenomenally gifted. He was from Moy Lob, played for Curry, the local club there. In 2017, he helped Sligo reach the All-Ireland Minor quarterfinal, top scoring in every game despite being a year younger than his teammates. Man of the match in that quarterfinal defeat against Derry, kicking 11 points out of Sligo's total of 15 in a 1 point defeat.
Wow.
I mean, you can't really deliver much more than that on the big day. He went on to captain the Miners the following year, had a stint in Aussie Rules with North Melbourne, and more recently was making strides with DCU, Murph. Like, he was picked on the Sigerson team, effectively the All-Stars, Sigerson All-Stars, for want of a better term. I would imagine you don't make that kind of selection without being a serious footballer.
Yeah, like as has been the case in DCU for the last probably 10 or 15 years, nearly everyone on that team is an intercounty player. So it's they're well used to seeing fellas from counties like Sligo come up with reputations and trying to fit them in with, you know, lads that have made Dublin under 21 teams and Kerry under 21 teams and stuff like that. But it was obvious that Red Oak was of a different level altogether. First of all, to make that All-Star team, but also just to score as heavily as he did from midfield and centre forward, which were kind of his main positions. And also just to hear what his teammates have said about him over the course of the last 12 months or more, it kind of makes you realise that you're dealing with a genuinely, I think he's used the word phenomenon, like a genuinely phenomenal talent in the sport of Gaelic football.
Did you see the point? Did you see the sideline point?
Yes.
That has been posted in the years since. It's amazing. It's just a clip of him kicking a point from a sideline against St. Mary's in Belfast from a crazy angle. You assume it's out on the left, right? Like near enough the corner flag, left touchline, obviously, left sideline. And you'd assume you'd have to be a right footer to even give yourself a chance of hitting it. But he nonchalantly collects the ball, sort of flicks it up to himself, walks over, to the sideline, takes a few steps back, hops the ball a couple of times to settle himself, and then proceeds to, with his left, slice the ball deliberately over the bar with the outside of his boot.
It's one of the most unbelievable scores I think I've ever seen. Just an absolutely, I mean, the sort of thing that you give out to players for going for, basically.
Unless they're as good as that. Just talking to people in Sligo this week, his death last year was, it was such a seismic event in the county. He was so well known, like already a real superstar there, and the news was felt more widely in the GAA community as well. This is David Clifford during his victory speech after Kerry won the Division 1 league final last year.
I just want to I suppose send regards from everyone in Kerry GAA to the family of Red Oak Murphy from Sligo. I suppose I was We were all lucky enough to see Red Oak play in the Sigerson this year, and we saw what he could do. So, like I said, just sending our best wishes to the family from everyone in Kerry GAA. So, thanks, lads.
Yeah, nice words last year from David Clifford about Red Oak Murphy. Now, here is our chat with Red Oak's mum and dad.
Fair to say, anybody could have managed those guys?
No, of course not.
About 12. Everyone in the city knew about him, but no one had seen him.
Look how happy I was. What the fuck happened? No, really. What happened?
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
This Saturday, the 1st of April, marks the one-year anniversary of the death of Red Oak Murphy. Red Oak's parents, Geraldine and Redmond, have been good enough to come into studio today to share their memories of their son, and also to try to open up a conversation around suicide, which hopefully can benefit others who are struggling with mental health issues. Guys, thanks so much, first of all, for coming in. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
It's the one-year anniversary, as I mentioned. What kind of thoughts are going through your head as that date approaches?
I suppose, I mean, every day it's with us, and just because it's a year, it doesn't make it much more different for us. Like, but I mean, we take one day at a time, and that's the way we deal with it. And we believe that he's still with us, unless we get our strength from him. So, yeah.
Is that the same for you, Redmond?
It's the same, yeah. We had conversations during the week with respect to, you know, making a special hoo-ha about this next weekend coming, but as Geraldine says, like, we miss him every day and probably more on some days.
Yeah.
And that, you know, not to, I suppose, raise the sadness in any particular time, just to try and keep everything on an even keel, you know.
The Sligo are obviously in the league final this weekend as well, so I guess that there's an extra emotion around that probably as well.
There is for us, in the sense that every time we watch Sligo playing, we think of, you know, Red Oak being playing with them. So there's a little bit of that, but you know, you learn to cope.
You've kind of alluded to it being there obviously every day, and there being some days better than others. Has the time helped at all, do you think?
You never forget. You don't forget. But like you just deal with it. You, as people say, you do learn to deal with it. But it's that you'll never be forgotten. You know, the love that was in it will never be broken.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. We've said very openly from the start that we look back on the great memories. Like, there's a lovely line in Malky Clerkin's, at the end of it, he says something like, you look to the brightness, the light in the sky, as opposed to, but it's a beautiful, the last line in the article.
Yeah.
So we look for fond memories of the 21 years and what he achieved, and we were there with him because we were both of us, and we're there with all our lads, no matter, you know, whatever they're doing. So we were with him all the way in that journey, you know.
Can I hear some of those memories? Like, what kind of a person was Red Oak?
Well, I suppose from the beginning, he was always very lively. He was always out there. He was ambitious, and he always wanted to do his best. But a very funny story, and I haven't told the story before, is that we were at a football match, and it was an under-10 football match down in Sligo. I won't name the place, but they were there playing, and these parents from the other side, and one of the mothers was there, and her fellow was going, he was kicking the ball all over the place, and you know, he was doing well, and she used to clap and she'd say, "That's my boy, that's my boy," and she was doing well and singing him on. So the next thing, Red Oak got the ball, and she was bursting my head actually. So then Red Oak got the ball, and he was coming up the field with it, and he came from one end of the pitch to the other, and put it in, banged in the back of the goal, and I just clapped my hands and I said, "That's my boy."
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. So those, you know, you have all those memories to look back on.
It's so nice. The word perfectionist, I think, was used. I've seen in the Malachy piece and elsewhere about Red Oak. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much. Everything was very. He always had everything just right. So the story we've been told. You know, with the different interviews, we'll just try and mix up the stories because there's a good
few. So I'm just sure you have so many, of course.
Yeah. So this piece that, you know, I think up to the age of 15, I used to, he'd line out his gear on the floor and he'd say, "Right, Dad, come on." And I'd say, "Boots, yeah. Socks, yeah. You know, togs, yeah. Short gum underarm, shields. Yeah. Gum shield, yeah." He'd just have it lined out. So he had to have, and his togs and his clothes all over the years, like everything had to be perfect. You know, in the sense that, you know, everything was just right.
Mm. And then from the educational side of things, like he would be in his room and he would study and, yeah, he'd have to have it off pit for pat. And as we have said before, he would, like, to memorise something, he would put it into his desk, he'd a wooden desk, and he would inscribe it and he'd be learning it off. And, like, all those inscriptions are still on his desk in his room.
Yeah. I spoke to Colin McGee, who had him at school as a teacher and as a coach as well. And he was backing up exactly what you were saying about the academic side. And then he said, football-wise, he put him into the senior team in third year, I think, which is not the dumb thing.
Very rare, yeah.
Usually, so obviously he saw the talent. But when people would ask Colin McGee, what has he got? You know, what's he like as a player? He said, it's not what he has, it's that he lacks nothing. That's what he used to say, that he an all-rounder basically on the field and there were no weaknesses really.
Yeah, I think of all the years and at underage in Sligo playing with Curry like that, in GA terms, Curry, the club is number one, you know. Mm-hmm. So he'd play and he was quite, from the years from, I suppose, 12 onwards, he'd have been playing with numerous underage teams, probably making up numbers at times in a sense, but he always performed well and he was a focus of, you know, this is the guy we have to mark and, you know, there'd be a bit of physical involved. So as it went on, when he got to college, in DCU specifically, he was playing with, he seemed to really be settled in. He wasn't the focus anymore, and he seemed to, you know, thrive playing. He was never as content playing Gaelic as he was the couple of years in DC.
When you're that good from that young, did his personality change at all? Did he get the big head or anything?
No.
as young lads, young people can do?
No, I mean, he didn't realise he was as good as he was. Nor did we, I suppose. I mean, we knew he was good, but we'd never, like, if he had a bad game, we'd be sure to tell him he had a bad game. And I mean, people used to say to me, "Jerry, you're very hard on him." But like, if he played well, you'd say, "Yeah, great game." But like, you know, there's always room for improvement. But he was the one that he wanted to get it right. If it was something happened on the pitch, and it was Redmond, I'll tell you the stories. But yeah, he'd want to get it right.
So I'm sorry, just when you were telling him he had a bad game, how would those kind of conversations go?
"Oh, Jesus," he'd say, "Oh, Jesus." But, you know, recently I found in his room, he had a diary and he had it kept from every match he played.
Right.
Yeah.
So he was that meticulous in what he did.
Yeah, I don't think you haven't read it, no. But it's like everything's in it. But at the very end of every match, he's got courage. This is what he has at the end.
Yeah.
Courage.
We didn't talk about the level, but he's an unbelievable, right? You know, Colin McGee talked about in his maths, like he played 13 Connacht finals for the schools. Now, school was really talented. They had a lot of... For a Sligo school, he played 3 Connacht A finals, senior schools finals, and he started at 15. So he played from there. He played three in a row. Now the last year was he would have been expected to do the performance. But I think the best one for me was, and Kieran would appreciate this. We played St. Jarlath's in a junior A final, and it was 3:15. We bet Jarlath's well on the day, but we scored 3:15 as a school, and Red Oak scored 3:11 out of 3:15.
Wow.
And that's against Jarlath's in the Connacht in the junior A final, it was incredible. For me, it was special.
Well, listen, feel free to stick it to Kieran now, and you chat to him after the piece. That's a phenomenal achievement. You know, that kind of scoring part. He also, in the middle of all this, right? We mentioned the different finals. He went to Australia, so he went to the AFL. He was still in school when he went to the AFL, right?
He came to, I suppose, he came to national recognition they played Derry in a All-Ireland quarter-final minor. Mm. Now, he was a year young that year when he was playing. But Derry beat them. It was the year Kerry bet Derry in the final, the minor final. And Derry beat Sligo by a pint on that day, 15 pints to 16 pints, 15, I think. And he scored 11 out of the 15 pints for Sligo that day.
Yeah.
So that he got sports, what was it, Ger?
Player of the year.
He got player of the week. But then he came to the attention of the scouts then for the AFL. And he attended a combine in Dublin. And from there he was after contract. Well, he went away to Australia for 2 weeks trial with a guy from Derry. And the two of them, and he was picked and given a full-time contract.
That's got to be a tricky one from the parents' point of view, though, right?
It's like, he wasn't 18 when the scout came initially. And then, like, they had to wait until he was 18 to say whether they'd take him, accept him or not. But, like, he was going into his leaving cert year, and we were saying, Red Oak, you know, your leaving cert. And, you know, in Ireland, kind of the leaving cert is the be-all and end-all of everything, which it shouldn't be, really. But so we said to him if he was going to go, like, we would never stop him going, but if he wanted to go and it didn't work out, that he would have, if it didn't work out, he'd have to come back and do his leaving cert. So that was like what he went on. And then he was there for how many, about
January to end of August.
August. Yeah. And then like he said he wanted to come home, and that was fine. We were delighted to have him coming home. But again, he'd have to go back in to do his leaving cert. And then his brother, who's just the next one down from me, was in the leaving cert year, and he was kind of shocked at this. Like, and he's going to say, "Well, like, who's he going to pal around with?" You know, because I mean, all his old friends are gone. But yeah, he came back, and he came back, I think, on a Monday. He went back to school very quickly. We had to ask Centre Tractors if they'd accept him back in, and of course they did with open arms.
Yeah.
They were very good to him. Yeah,
you said earlier, Redmond, that he was very happy football wise, certainly when he was with the college, when he was with DCU, and obviously playing very well because he was effectively an all-star. He was a few days away from picking up his trophy for being in the team of the year.
Yeah, he seemed in the underage up through the year, and even at county level up to pre-Australian years, he'd have been getting a lot of attention on the pitch, and he would have, you know, get very frustrated with that. And, you know, he'd get frustrated in the game then. But when he started playing college, that was gone. Like he was really relaxed playing football. He was content on the pitch. He never swore at a referee, which was common enough when he was, you know, and he was just anonymous on the pitch other than playing football, you know.
Off the pitch, did he seem happy?
Oh my God, yeah, he was very happy. Actually, that week, I mean, we thought we had the discussion that we thought he was so happy that week, the week, like say this time last year, and that like there was no sign of discontentment. I mean, he was okay. Yeah, he was out on teaching practice, and that can be stressful. But like we said to him, like you'll get over that, and that'll, you know, you'll be fine. But that, like, other than that, there was nothing.
So he seemed so fine that you had actually had a conversation about how good he seems to be in great form.
Oh yeah, we had had that week. We were saying like it was great that he had got, you know, to go to the awards night, that, and he was like going down to EJ's in Sligo to do his shopping for his clothes, which he was mad into his style. And Rachel was coming down, his girlfriend, and they were going to see Redmond's mother in Galway that weekend. Dahi's birthday, we were going out, that was booked for the Sunday. Like there were so many plans in place, and he just seemed to be so content. And then this out of the blue.
And he hadn't had mental health issues that you know of before that? There wasn't a history so much?
I suppose the false confidence we had was that, you know, he talked about everything. No matter what was, you know, it could have been. After matches we talk, this is with all the lads. We talk about Red Oak specifically today, but this is with all the lads. Yeah. We'd have numerous long conversations after matches, and we'd slice it up and dice it around, and he'd be part of that. And there was times in Dublin, in DCU, where his first Sigerson outing for the seniors, he was asked to leave the pitch that night because he misdemeanor. And that night we were ages talking to him, you know, that he said, never get to play Sigerson now, and all this, you know. So he wore his heart, and we spent, I'd say, an hour that night, Jeremy, you and me talking, you know, you'd be all right, you know, but, and he never looked back after that either. But
Paddy Christie was very good to him. Were all the DCU team, but like, they were excellent to him.
Paddy Christie's in charge of the football out there.
Yes. They were so good to him. Like, Paddy, as you know, was a principal of a school, so he used to go out and teach and practice, or teaching something out to Paddy as well. And he enjoyed him.
But they never knew. They never knew that he was an inter-county footballer, or that he was in Australia playing AFL. They never knew.
He just wouldn't say a word.
Obviously, Paddy knew, but the rest of the teachers and staff in the school didn't know.
So did you feel the same, Geraldine, as Redmond, that you had a very open relationship with him, that he generally talked to you about?
He would talk to me, and a lot of things. And some things he would discuss with me that he wouldn't discuss with his father, and I presume vice versa, you know. But, yeah, so we did. And that's like... With this, he wouldn't have done anything to hurt any of us, but especially me.
Yeah. If there's anything you're not comfortable talking about, absolutely let me know. But can either of you describe how you found out what happened on the day? How exactly that unfolded for you?
We said Red was with Rachel, his girlfriend, out in North Dublin or South Dublin, Fir House out there. He was in a school out there, the two of them, but they didn't know they were going out with each other. Rachel had, you know, Red didn't show up on the Friday morning, obviously, and Rachel had texted Oisín, and Oisín was in Limerick. So Oisín then rang Mammy and said, "Did you hear from Red Oak?" And then it started from there, you know. We started ringing security to check his room, check was the car there, all that elements of thing. And as that was happening, then I began to head across town, across to the college, and Ger was waiting for further news and into the phone. So that day, the site director had come. We knew there was something very wrong.
Yeah, from when I got the phone call at 12 o'clock from Oisín to say, like, had I heard from him? And I said, "Sure, he's at school." And he said, "No, ma'am, he's not." And once I knew... We heard that he wasn't in school, I knew there was something radically wrong, because that wouldn't be Red Oak style, not to inform someone if he was sick or if he'd been in an accident or something. So, yeah, I knew there was something wrong. Like, as I said, I was at work in Curry and Redmond was in Dublin, and thought he was in St. Tractors in school. So then it was the longest half an hour just waiting for to hear something back. And when Oisín did get the news that he was dead, it was trying to get Thahi from the secondary school without hearing, but it's, you know, social media, like, it just news travels so quickly. But in fairness, the deputy principal there, she got Thahi and brought him to me, which is about just 3 miles away, but without him. And she was trying to keep his phone off him, that he wouldn't, you know, she was trying to keep him in a conversation, that he wouldn't look at his phone, because she knew it was going to be on it.
So then from there, then Oisín began to ring to say that Red Oak was found. The way he put it to me, he said he was with the footballers. And I said, "Is he dead?" And he said, "Yeah, no, he's dead." He said, "Don't do anything stupid now. I'll be up to you soon." So that was his first thought, to come to look after me. So he did. And Geraldine, in the meantime, would have known then as well. So the guards were at the room at that point. A number of things happened. The guards would have inspected the room prior to that. Security would have done the protocol with respect to his death. But I arrived in shortly after that, and I went into the room with Red for a while, because I feel to this day that was good for me too, that I seen him, you know, as it was. And
I was at home in Moyla, and like the neighbours at the stage had come in, and they were, and my family were there. My family are just in Swinford, and whereas Redmond's are in Galway. But like the news started to filter through, and just like from when I came home, people, the neighbours were in, and they were, you know, very good and consoling and doing their bit for us. But like the neighbours and the GA and everybody took over from there, you know, looking after us. But like we had a week before Red Oak died on a Friday, and it was actually the Wednesday before he came home to Moyla, and on Friday he was buried. So like we had a week there to take it all in. But and people said, "God, you must have found it a long week." Yeah. But it wasn't a long week. It was, if you could say it was a lovely week, it was, because like his friends came from everywhere, and like it just all over, and they were in the house morning, noon, and night, and it was lovely. They talked, they cried, they laughed, they were up in his room and down. But like It was like someone said to us, suggested to us that we keep the house closed for, but like I said, our house was always open in good times, so we left it open in bad. But we found, we got great comfort from that, as well as the, they're his friends.
You did as well, Redmond, you found some solace from the support that everyone that rallied around like that.
They took us into their arms, the community, the club, the neighbours. The neighbours were the front line, like, and then after that, the club, the wider community. But they just took it in. They ate us, fed us, they cleaned the house. We'd get up in the middle of the night. You know, you were only sleeping 3 or 4 hour periods at that point. So you'd get up in the middle of the night and everybody's there making tea and coffee, doing a cup of coffee. Like, and that's the way it went down for the week. And it was good for us because, you know, it was, I suppose we had everybody around. We were sharing stories, you know, remembering the good times, which is the theme of the whole, our record, yeah. You know, our day-to-day is remembering all the good times. And
so with that, trying to remember all the good times, do you just try to keep it out of your head as to why he did it, to try to work out why it ended that way? Is it something you spend much time on, or nothing positive can potentially come out of that?
We don't dwell on it. Like, I mean, obviously, yes, it does go through your head. I wonder why. But like, you could put yourself in a bad way by looking back. So you have to try and concentrate on all the positives and move forward. And Radog, you know, and I keep saying this, but this is his way. He was so positive in everything. And it was a push on. Like, this was with football. And I mean, he would have done recordings and little video clips for different people. And that was his message out there, you know, just strive, keep pushing on, keep on, you'll get there. And like, that's it. Like, to us, there's no point in looking back. It won't bring him back. And you have to be, like, for the other two boys as well, you have to remain positive and keep going and keep strong. I mean, okay, you have your moments and you have your upsets and like that. Every day isn't perfect.
Yeah.
Go
on.
Yeah, but you just have to keep going. And that's what, and we do. We do our best. But we still believe he's around. And like, you get little signs and you think, oh my God, Radog, you're here.
Go on, what sort of signs?
Oh, well, I tell the story and my mother will kill me. But I go visit my mother during the week, and in her house, the front door, and like, it makes a swish sound when it's opening. And then, you know, I say to her, sometimes I hear the swish sound, and when I'm sitting there with her, and I'll say to her, Mam, there's somebody coming. And she look, and then she'll say, sure, no, there's nobody coming. And now, this has happened on numerous occasions. Even last Saturday, I was sitting there with my sister and I said to her, do you hear that? And she said, no. And she said, what do you hear? And I said, the door. I said, there's like the swish to the door, but like, nobody comes through. And I just said, that's a sign from Radog.
Wow, yeah. I mean, and you can really, I can feel that this, like, you are displaying an unbelievable amount of strength, even to be able to come into a studio and talk about this. Why is it that you want to talk publicly in this way? What would you like to come out of these conversations?
I suppose the first thing is that, and we've said very openly, and it mightn't be fashionable, but we believe that Radog is with us. The circumstances are that he's further down the road, that he's reached the destination, and we're finding, you know, we're making our way there. And he's helping us do that. But he's still part of our family, because it, just to add a little bit of a story, in New York, Sligo were in New York just shortly after he died last year to play the first round of the championship. Pat Spillane's first game, or he had a great game with Sligo that day. And every one of the photos, we began to start observing very early on that photos that we had nothing to do with had a purple light on them, just a purple spot.
It's blue orb, they're called, the right. Blue orbs, yeah.
So all the photographs coming through, phone photographs, they were all had this particular spot of light on it.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, I lost.
No, it's okay. And actually, I just wanted to pick up on something you said there, that it mightn't be very fashionable, but you still believe he's with us. Do you mean that religion isn't very fashionable now?
Yeah, that's right. Because we'd say, well, we are religious and we've talked about it. No, we're not. Like somebody asked, were we going to mass more often or not? We go to regular mass. Radog went to mass the Sunday before he died, like, yeah. And two lads still go to mass, not out of because we say you have to, but they go willingly. But
no, he might have had a bit of a hangover on that particular Sunday morning, but he went to mass. Yeah,
but it helps us. We believe that this is it. Like, it's we're heading down in his direction. He'll be there for us when we pass from this life. And there's a piece on the headstone was put up this week, and there's one piece on it that Jared picked out. He said, meet you at the fair post. Mm-hmm. And that kind of says it too.
And you're finding strength from that source as well.
Oh yeah, like as from day one, we believed that Red Oak was a miracle, and that we had him for the 21 years, and that he fulfilled so much in his 21 years, like other people wouldn't have done it in a lifetime. And like we went places that we would never have gone with him. You know, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have gone. Like we wouldn't have been in Australia, only for Red Oak. So yeah, and we were blessed to have him, and that's the way we look at it, and thankful that we have. Like there'd be no bitterness, no, none of that. You know, just we're just happy that we had him.
Why do you feel like he was a miracle?
You see, I would have had a miscarriage before I had him. And when I had difficulties when I was pregnant with him. And the gynecologist in Cork said, oh, no, he said, we'll throw everything at this one. And so he was with the gynecologist, I have to say, and in the Bonds in Cork, they were excellent to us. And they were with us every step of the way and watching me, monitoring me through my pregnancy, as I'm sure they do with all pregnancies. But yeah, so I, like we feel that we got him. And I remember at the time, actually, it was Dr. Carr was his name. And when he saw him at the checkup, the 6 weeks checkup, whatever, and he looked at his hands and he said, "That fella'll make a great rugby player for Cork." He said, "Like that." Yeah.
Not on your watch. Says
No. Yeah.
That's the thing we don't talk much about. Is he's a Cork man?
He's born in Cork. Yeah, he was born in Cork.
Oshin and Redover, Cork men. They were born in Cork.
Very good. Well, that's we did want to get back to the kind of reasons for having these conversations, and I know you would like people who might be struggling themselves with mental health to feel they can talk about it. I think just generally that people are more comfortable talking about this kind of thing in public.
Yeah, we're learning as we go along, but very much that Friday night, Red Oak had reached a point of no return. For some reason, whatever the reason was, he reached a point of no return. And what we're begging people to do, and especially the younger groups, is that not to let it get to that point. That if there's early warning signs or this, you know, if suicide comes into your head for any millisecond, you know, ask, tell your best friend. There's loads of help out there where you can go, ring up, and it's all very anonymous, like, but it's very, very supportive, and it's very, it's empathy and all that. So instead of letting it allow it to the point of no return, that if you think of suicide, even if it blinks across your mind for a millisecond, you know, it's time to talk to somebody. It's time to tell a friend. It's time to seek some help, you know, that before it gets to that level.
Is that your message as well, Julia?
Yes. I mean, with Red Oak, he was a planner and everything was planned. But for me, I don't believe for 1 minute that this was planned, that he had this planned. I just don't. I just think it, not that it was a 1 minute act. I just think that he might have gone into, it might have been an hour, might have been 2 hours that he got into that mode. But once he got into it, he couldn't stop. Now, in other circumstances, like there are suicides that are planned, but like we would hope that people, you know, that feel themselves in, like Redmond is saying, in that situation, that they would talk to somebody and just pick up the phone, or, you know, just to talk to somebody rather than, like, they may plan it for weeks and whatever, but like, just don't go there. I mean, we wouldn't want anyone to go through the pain that we go through.
Aisling B, the actor and comedian, her father died by suicide, and she watched a documentary about a woman whose son had died by suicide. And she wrote about this documentary she was watching. She thought that her son probably hadn't wanted to die forever, just on that day when he'd been in so much pain. A light bulb moment for me. It had never occurred to me that maybe suicide had seemed like the best option in that hour. In my head, my father had taken a clear decision as my parent to opt out forever. That sounds like it might be how you view Red Oak, that it was a dark day or a dark moment.
Yeah, a dark couple of hours, and that he just got into that frame of mind and that he could see no way out. Like, we just feel his time was up, that nothing, you know. And I speak about the lights, that this is, again, going back to the faith bit. And I mean, I do say I'm not a holy Job, but like those lights that I saw in Curry that night, I was going, I don't know whether you've heard the story, I was going to pick up Dahi at football training and was passing the school where I work. And whatever, I mean, I could see the lights, the main lights were on in the classroom. And when I was passing by, I looked back in my mirror for something and I could see these blue lights on my office window. And I thought, what are they? And I couldn't like fathom what they were. So I just, curiosity got the better of me. So I spun around on the road and I went back. And they were there. I could see them as plain as day right in front of me. And I went to the school. The caretaker wasn't in the school. So I rang him and I just said to him, the lights are on in the classroom. And he said, "Sure, I don't think I'll put them on." But he said, "I'll go out and turn them off." So he came out, and, you know, he didn't go into my office because he didn't have the key. But I was coming after picking Dahi up and the lights were still on, but the lights were going off in the classroom, but the lights were still on. And to me, it was a token from Our Lady that, like, that was it. And the following morning, we went into school and I was opening the door and I was afraid of my life going in. I thought, God, what's ahead of me here? And there were the girls laughing and they were joking at break time. They were saying, she was seeing lights last night in the office. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was about maybe an hour and a half after that that the news came through. Mm-hmm. And I said, that was okay. That was my blue lights. Like, they'd be like the candelabra. That Our Lady, and that's just my, and that's, I get great comfort from that.
So Geraldine tells, it's not my line, but it's Geraldine's line. She said she appeals, and every court she appeals, that people are good to themselves. So I was reading a poem somewhere during the week, totally by accident, you know, and it says, if you don't feel good getting up in the morning, that's okay. You know, if you don't feel like working, do your best, that's okay. You know, if you go to bed at night feeling bad, and that's okay too. You've done your best for the day. So it's people not to be hard on themselves. Gerald always tell you, you know, like, not to be hard on themselves, to go easy on themselves, you know, give themselves a chance, give themselves a break.
Have you had a lot of people get in touch with you, in particular, maybe since you did that piece with Malachy in the Irish Times? Have a lot of families and people been in touch to have these kind of conversations?
We would have got a lot of letters, yeah. A lot of letters, texts, yeah, but more so the letters, and people that would have got, that wouldn't, maybe had experienced suicide in their own family, but they wouldn't have had come to terms with it. But now that they have listened to us, that they're coming out a little bit more and getting on with life. You know, I mean, it's, everybody grieves differently. Yeah, and that's, we have got, even after like the last radio we were on, and that was Ocean FM, we got letters back from that. But we know, and we have heard feedback that we have saved and helped people, you know, saved and saved two lives for sure.
Okay.
And that's what we want. That's about, this is what we want. Yeah. This is what we want to get out there.
Yeah. And do you guys feel almost a pressure that goes with that, or a responsibility when people who are in vulnerable positions themselves, or have family members in vulnerable positions, maybe are contacting you about this kind of thing?
Well, I had an incident one evening since Red Oak passed away, and her son was in difficulty, and I heard that her son was in difficulty, and I went to the lady and I said to her, look, get in the car and go, because I said, you have the sign, you have got the warrants, you've got, I said, just go. I said, we didn't get that chance.
Do you feel that it is a conversation that people are uncomfortable having in general, that we all need to work a bit harder on talking about this kind of stuff?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it has to be with the young people. It has to start in secondary school, where people discuss this and talk about it. And people don't talk about stigma. I think there's a stigma related with suicide and that they won't talk about it. But I mean, if you talk, like, you get it out of your system and you get help.
Yeah. Have you found that even afterwards, like talking like this and having conversations, does it give you guys a sense of purpose as well? Has it helped you through the last year that you've actually been able to maybe help other people?
Yes, it has. Just maybe to clarify a point, we wouldn't routinely have people coming to us asking us, if, you know, we're in trouble, can you help? We wouldn't at all, apart from the story that Geraldine, just to be clear, because that's important. And you asked, like, the interviews is under pressure. No, this is an opportunity for us to get the message out there. This is what we're doing. We're doing our best. Like, withdrawing people. And not withdrawing is not the word. We're, you know, we just live a normal life. Yeah. And we don't do the light, you know, the
Spotlight
piece. But this for us is, we feel good after, because we feel out of a bad situation, some good might come.
Yeah. And that's what we think, that Red Oak is gone, but that he's still working through us, that he's doing another job, that he was brought for another job, and that we're here to do that work for him here, you know, to put out that word.
Have you got a sense over the last 12 months of how loved he was, of the kind of figure he was for other people?
Yeah, Red Oak wouldn't have any idea. He'd be, Redmond says, but he would be embarrassed with all these. Yeah, he would be. Like, it's unbelievable, like, from this neck of the woods and all over Ireland and England, different countries, where all the letters have come from. It's unbelievable. I mean, he would die if he was embarrassment of all that. Like, he never realised how popular he was. Not a clue.
I think the night his first night that we were home together, we were both obviously we were very upset. That had been the Friday night of known of his death, and RAP started the condolences and RAP started to collect, and some lovely messages in there from all around the country, and we got a huge comfort from that because he was so different people. Like there's a lovely story about a lady in Dingle. You know, she felt it was appropriate to put it in. She said, look, I watched them play the year they beat Jarlath's, they played the All-Ireland semi-final against the school from Dingle. And Red Oak was playing that day, and they lost to Dingle by a couple of points or something on the day. And she said in the RIP that I followed him all his career since then, a Kerry woman.
Wow.
And there was another story. There's a friend of mine whose son lives on an island out in Australia, some part of Australia, I don't know where. But there was this woman that watched him as an Irish fella coming over in Australia, and she watched him, and like her son lives on the island, and she said to him about the Irish boy that died, and that she had followed him all the way. Like, and I mean, that's Australia, and she had followed him and all the way, even when he came back here, she followed him. She was gutted. She was devastated. And she hadn't a clue of us, or she never met him, but she just followed him, being an Irish boy.
Just the impact that he made on her.
Yeah, wow. But like that, it wasn't just with his football, though. I mean, he had that persona that he got on so well with people, and he just, like someone said, he was like sprinkling gold on people when he met people. He was that just the kind of fella he was.
The day he died, a girl came up to me. She said, "Red Oak never passed anybody." He said. He'd stop instead of saying, "How are you?" He'd stop and say, "He'd talk to you." Mm. And he seemed to have that effect in the DCU. The different stories out of DCU was that, you know, when he came into a room that he lit up, you know, he, I won't say he lit it up, but that's the words being used. But he had a presence in the room and people liked him and enjoyed his company. There's another fairly phenomenal as well, just for his popularity, his mass, his funeral mass. After 2 weeks, it was gone to 97,000 views, which is very unusual for such a tragic event. But, you know, it just goes to show you. But the RIP, it tells a million stories of people all around the country. But again, an empathy and arms around you to say, you know, we're thinking of you, you know. Tough times, and we're thinking of you.
And that has gone through, that's all through the year, though. People have called, and you know, they're there. And some people may not be in your face, but you know, they're there. Like, flowers might arrive at the door, vegetables have arrived, no names on them, but like, people are so good.
Well, listen, you've left us with that's a wonderful tribute to your son, I think, and some lovely memories there. And I know it's not an easy conversation either. So, Geraldine, thank you so much. Rebin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bob sweeps, side to side, up, down, in, out, scores left hand. There's 10 seconds to go. McGuigan on a rope, off the ropes, takes a left to the body, but the champion has no venom left. As McGuigan goes for the big finish, catches him with a right hand, it's all over, it's all over. They're going for silver, they're going for bronze. John Tracy is 100 metres to go. In the past, Ireland have won bronze medals. John Caldwell, Freddie Gilroy, Sox Byrne, Jim McCourtney, Russell. They've won gold. Pat O'Callaghan, White, Bob Chisholm, Ron Delaney. They've won silvers with John McNally, Fred Keith, Wilkinson. And for the 13th time, an Irish medal goes to John Tracy. The crowd stand for the Irishman from Villierstown and Waterford. The little man with the great heart.
If it's the blue one, it's the Cuban. If it's the red one, it's the Irishman. The Cuban did some very good work on the inside. And Michael Carruth is the champion of the Olympic Games. Michael Carruth is the champion, the champion, the champion.
Gentlemen, I'm in the ring here. And it's a joyous moment. Hey, Barry McGuigan, champion of the world.
Oh, Jimmy, Jesus.
What a moment.
A dream come true.
Barry, it's a long time since there was first interviews in the National Stadium.
Yeah. Hello, Ireland. Hello.
We love you. Well done, Barry. That's it. Barry McGuigan been swept away. Your commentator with him from QPR's football ground. Ladies and gentlemen, I leave you with the words. Barry McGuigan is champion of the world.
thanks once again to Redmond and Geraldine for coming into us and speaking so powerfully on the pod. I mean, two seriously impressive people. You really get the sense of how important it is to them that talking about their experience can hopefully help others in some way. If you're affected by anything you heard in that chat, there are people to talk to, including groups like the Samaritans or Pieta House, among others. You can go on samaritans.ie or call them on 116 123. The Pieta House website is pieta.ie. You can call them on 1800 247 247 or text help to 51444. That's almost it from us for this week. A heads up on next week. The Premier League is back, obviously, so we'll have a football pod on Monday and some Champions Cup rugby talk. We'll build up to the Republic of Ireland women's doubleheader against the USA. Michael Murphy is on with Paul Flynn. It's a good time to talk to Michael Murphy. He can provide a bit of insight into the goings on in Donegal football the last few weeks.
And there have been quite a few
of those and loads more besides. But before we go today, Murph, can you please bring us your weekly Francis Murphy's Guide to the Weekend Sport on Television?
Good morning, everyone. I loved watching City all year. They were very good, even though I'm a Liverpool supporter. Hello to all the listeners of Second Captains at home and abroad. Thank you.
Do we need to explain the whole idea of the Francis Murphy TV Guide? Probably not. Let's just say, Owen, that my mother watches a lot of sport on television and she would appreciate the sort of advice that I'm now about to
give. She really does. She goes deep.
But before we get to that, Owen, it's a very special day for the Murphy family because Tony and Francis are married 50 years today.
Are you serious?
Yes, 50 years. Great achievement.
Congratulations.
For man more than dad, let's be honest. It is a better achievement for man than it is dad.
She's done well.
But we're all very excited. We're all meeting up in the home place tonight for a little celebration. So I'm sure you'd like to add your congratulations.
No, I would absolutely like to add my congratulations to Tony and Francis.
My mother always says, how are the lads? How's Owen? And then how's Mark? And then the rest of the lads.
I'm up there. I love it. No, I absolutely love it.
So it will mean a lot to her, Owen, so thank you for that. Tonight we have Shelburne against Derry City on RT2 at 7:45pm. Tomorrow then, the Premier League starts early on BT Sport at 12:30. It's Man City against Liverpool, followed by the Champions Elect on Gunnersaurus TV, Premier Sports 1, Arsenal against Leeds at 3pm.
The secret champions, as Ken called them yesterday, only being seen in the Republic of Ireland.
On Arsenal Premier games. Sports.
Yeah.
Quite mental, with Chelsea Villa, the late game, at 5:30pm on Sky Sports. If you want to go a little further afield, then there's Bayern against Borussia Dortmund. Thomas Tuchel's first game as Bayern manager on Sky Sports Football, also at 5:30pm. Tons of rugby action on Saturday as well on BT Sport 3 at 12:30. It's the Sharks against Munster, live from South Africa, followed by Ireland-France in the Six Nations at 3:15pm, with Leinster-Ulster following hard after that at 5:15pm on BT Sport 4 and RTE2. So Leinster-Ulster is on RTE2. Okay. The Division 3 and 4 finals are on TG Cahir. Sligo against Oisín McConville's Wicklow at 5pm, as we've been discussing, followed by Fermanagh-Cavan at 7:15pm. Anthony Joshua back in the ring on Saturday night against Jermaine Franklin, live on DAZN. Coverage starts at 7pm. He'll be in the ring at around, 10pm, but as ever, a movable feast. On Sunday then, the Australian Grand Prix at 4:30am on Sky Sports.
That's an early start.
Well, a little too early, Owen. Even for
the majority of people.
Even for McDevitt Jr.
Yeah.
The live GA on TG Cahir is Dublin against Derry in the Division 2 final at 1:45, followed by the Division 1 final between Galway and Mayo at 4pm, with the Division 2A hurling final between Kildare and Offaly available on the TG Cahir YouTube channel at 2pm also. And the two live Premier League games on Sunday are West Ham Southampton at 2, followed by Newcastle Manchester United at 4:30pm.
It's a nice weekend. That's a good spread.
Yes. Yeah. There's a bit on. Yeah. A lovely bit on.
I'll take that. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for the support as always. We will talk to you next week.
Which phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.